Making After School Cool.
Welcome to the Making Our School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those interested in the activities youth are engaged in during non-school hours. The Making Our School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a department of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Mike Wilson. Today is the second episode in our series of episodes, which will focus on the influence COVID-19 has had on the citizens of Harris County. Here's a quick review of how the virus has impacted our lives thus far. Around February of 2020, it started to become a major news story in the U.S. At that time, not much information or research regarding COVID had been collected. By mid-March, schools in our area started closing down, only to reopen by remote teaching. And with the exception of essential workers, many employers and employees worked from home. By September, many schools started reopening, but determining what was the best way to educate students safely was and still is a major topic of debate. Presently, nearly a year later, over 400,000 people in the United States have lost their lives to the virus, and nearly 1 million worldwide. By January 2021, vaccines have started being administered into people's arms. However, thus far, it has been a slow process. Now, with the new presidential administration leading our country, we are confronting new strains of the virus. So, it's been a year since we've been battling COVID. During this time, research regarding the effects of this pandemic has been ongoing. To help us get a better understanding of how COVID has changed our lives in Harris County is my guest, Dr. Elizabeth Gregory. Dr. Gregory is the director of the Institute for Research on Women, Gender, and Sexuality at the University of Houston. How are you doing today, Dr. Gregory?
Very well, thank you.
Well, it's great speaking with you again, and thanks for taking the time to be our guest. First, I want to lead off with, how did your department begin researching the impact of COVID-19 and the effects it has had on different demographic groups in Harris County?
Our institute was just begun in April of 2019, so it was very timely in terms of just being up and running to start dealing with the huge influx of new data that was coming in around COVID, since it affected so many parts of people's lives. So our institute was started to focus on gender and sexuality dynamics and data in Harris County and Houston in order to document that, make it part of the community discussion and innovate around new policy where there were problems. And certainly there were already problems around these issues. And we had generated our first overview report on gender and sexuality data in February of 2020. And that is available on our website at UHIRWGS. If you just search for that, you'll find it. So when COVID began in March, that was we were ready to go in terms of looking at all this new information that was coming in fast on so many fronts. And of course, everybody in the world was basically doing their own research. We were all learning together about COVID and its manifestations and how it affected people, but then also about all sorts of things about our society that we maybe hadn't been paying attention to, like the lack of a safety net, the important role of education in supporting families' ability to work, the lack of health care for millions of people in our society. And in a pandemic, that takes on a special resonance, because if somebody else is sick next to you, they didn't have sufficient health care, or they're not in a situation where they can be safe because of their work circumstances, things like that, their ill health affects that of everyone else in the community. And suddenly that lesson was coming home to us in a new way. So it actually isn't just my issue whether or not I have health care. It's actually everybody's issue whether everybody else has health care. So that all these things were changing the discussion, and our research was going along with that in order to augment the discussion to the extent that we could. So we started doing research on health. We did a survey on people's attitudes to and how things were changing in terms of their lives in the early days. But that moved so fast, we realized that a lot of that data you know, it was initial, but there were so many changes happening that we really need to have a more long-term sense of how all these changes have piled up over time. So we've been looking more at economic factors as well as health factors, and talking to people about the effects of childcare, looking also at domestic violence, which is directly affected by this pandemic. Just a lot of factors that we as a society need to pay attention to. So we've been busy.
Well, I'm so pleased to hear that, you know, doing all this research, especially on a local level. Sometimes we get information on the nightly news, which is more of a national and global level. So having some answers to some of the questions that COVID has created for our area is definitely welcome. So thank you so much for the research you and your department is doing on this issue. In our previous episode, we discussed the gendered hardship matrix, which includes such factors as females on average earn lower wages than their male counterparts, the impact low-income households with children have on families' access to needed resources, and the lack of affordable quality childcare and out-of-school time programs. Can you speak on how the gender wage gap impacts the quality of life for women, especially those with young children?
Certainly. It's pretty straightforward that in a family, if somebody's bringing in lower wages than someone else, the family has less money. So it negatively affects everybody in the family right away, right? So if I'm working at the same job as somebody else and we're both bringing home a weekly wage for 40 hours a week, say, and mine is $60 and his is $80, that means it's not just me who's out the $20, my family is out the $20, right? So that's one way of looking at the gendered wage gap. People maybe think about it, you know, women are making less, and isn't that too bad for women? Yes, but it's also too bad for everybody because the whole family loses. So that's an initial kind of issue, right? Where, and certainly in a context where a mom is working and supporting her kids on her own, that is even worse, right? Because not only does she not have the partner's additional funds, but she's making less than she would be if she had a different gender. You know, that's not fair to her kids either. So in both cases, the negative is apparent, right? You're making less money, then there's less that you can do for your family. So that's an initial problem, but it has lots of ripple effects too, because it means that women overall have less status within the community, because money talks, right? So if you're not able to represent as sort of a bigger player in the field, then your issues get ignored frequently. And that has been the history of women's status in society overall, as we know. Women haven't had much of a voice in the making of the laws or the policies to date, because they haven't been represented in government or business or anywhere that policymaking was active. So they've had some kind of influence along the way sometimes, you know, from behind the scenes, but it's not the same. So those issues all tie up together, this larger status issue around women in society, and not getting their issues addressed because they're not in the room where it happens, as they say in Hamilton. But also it affects their status in the home, right? So if you make less within the couple, depending on the couple, but even you can still say overall, it frequently gives women less status within a couple. And that means they make less, so they are supposed to be doing more of the direct work. That means somehow you make less, so you have to do more. That somehow doesn't balance out, you know, when you think about it. But they end up doing a lot of the family reproductive work, like the food and the cleaning and all that other stuff in addition. And part of that is related. You can say, oh, that's because society has viewed that as women's work all along. True, but it's tied to the fact that women's work is seen as less valuable And therefore, it sort of passed off, continues to be something that only people who are forced to do it would do. So if you have more status, then you just say, well, that's not my realm. That's your realm. That issue of status within a couple can have all kinds of negative effects. For instance, it makes women more susceptible to abuse, especially if you have children, right? So when you think about these questions, you don't think about that initially as a ripple effect of low wages, but maybe think about it for a minute and it's clear why it would be, right? So once, especially you have low wages and children, children immediately in a couple create a kind of dependency of the person who's earning less on the couple. And whenever you create dependency, you create vulnerability. Not everybody is vulnerable in the same ways, but it's a different kind of relationship than you would have if you were earning the same and had the same status, right? So that means if you're involved with somebody who maybe has some issues of his own and sees a situation where he knows you can't leave if he hits you and he feels bad, so he does hit you, that's a negative situation for you, and it's a negative situation for your children because they see that and they think that's normal, and that then becomes part of their process. And I would say that's bad for the whole society, because we might think of people as, you know, being in their separate units, but those units are formed, family units, by all these social systems that we have in place. And really, if somebody's being hit in one place and nobody's doing anything about it, that's a societal problem, and it means a lot of things for the society overall.
To kind of piggyback on that, what impact does low-income families experience in regards to having access to resources such as technology, food, housing? I know you spoke on the emotional impacts in regards to, you know, domestic abuse, frustration, stress, but just the everyday needs that families have, having limited resources, what impact does that have on the household?
Well, enormous. As you say, one of the major issues that's been revealed is the extreme inequities around access to the internet across the country, right? So rural people have big problems with these issues. And so there's a big tension between advocates for free internet or low cost internet for all, something along the lines of a utility like water or electricity. Everybody should have access to that in the contemporary world at a fee that they can afford, right? And especially if you are going to say you can't go to school and your kids have to go to school on the internet, or you can't work and you have to work on the internet. So one of the effects has been that people have been sent home to do work in their own space, kids and adults, but nobody is paying for the infrastructure for that work. Nobody's giving people a stipend to pay their monthly internet bill or to set up space within their house. Maybe they don't have a lot of room to have three kids, each one on a separate class, on a separate device, right? So this has been something that schools had to recognize it and have tried to address, but it is a much bigger problem than one school district at a time can address. So clearly, people who were better off to begin with could afford more devices, could deal with this better than others. But that is not what public school is supposed to be about. Public school is supposed to be about equal education. Now, we know that it hasn't been historically, but certainly in these basic levels of access, it's something that society has to address. And I think they are trying to discuss it if that's what's going to be discussed in the legislature this very session, right? That's one of the issues. Other issues happened around the food bill. Basically, for a year, families whose kids had been eating at school for free now had to pay for their own children to eat at home. And that's a big bite in the family budget, right? So Now they have just raised SNAP benefits by 15% specifically to cover that, but that's almost a year into it. So people have been dealing with that by going to food banks, you know, a lot of dynamics that we've seen in our city, and now it's almost normal. It's really shocking. But again, that's another one of the many ripple effects. Where you see an initial issue of, okay, well, that's inequitable. Some people in our society have access to daycare because they can pay for it. And then there are levels of daycare, right? There's good daycare and bad daycare. And then there's really good daycare. And what you can access frequently depends on your ability to pay, unless you're lucky and have access to Head Start. But then, you know, that's a limited resource. Somebody has decided in the upper levels of government that we're not going to make that available for all those who would want it. So suddenly it's revealed as this huge problem where we see enormous numbers of women stepping out of work in order to take care of their kids because they don't have any daycare, especially for toddlers and babies, but even including kids maybe up to the age of 12 who need to be supervised pretty directly when they're at school, right? You can put them on their device to some degree, but they're not gonna focus in the same way that a high school student could do. So this is a big gap. The things that this pandemic has revealed are problems that were already there, that everybody knew were problems. I mean, for me, it's always been shocking that there hasn't been more discussion of the failure of the school system to mimic the workday all along, right? So that already was a problem for everybody. In my view, you have kids who are not in school until they're five. So that's 5 years of coverage parents are responsible for. Then they get out at 2:30 or 3:00. So somebody's supposed to take care of them after school before their parents get home from work. And then they're off for 3 months in the summer. Who's supposed to take care of them then? Well, usually it's the woman. And that's basically the whole explanation of why women haven't succeeded in the workplace for the long term. And it's not just parents. Overall, employers just view women as likely to need to step out, and whether or not they have kids now, they might have kids later. So they have a kind of biased view toward women because they know that they're not supported by the school system. And that basic failure, you know, like 65% of the time during a child's life, or maybe it's 63, between the age of 0 and 18, that child is not in school during work hours. That is a huge proportion. And you think about that proportion and you think, well, no wonder everybody has difficulty managing it. You know, it's not even just the times that I mentioned. There are all these sort of random days off that, you know, teacher learning days, teacher education days, or things like that, when they just say, oh, school's closed today, it's on you. So not to say that the schools are in error there. They're really underfunded. They only have the funds for these very limited hours. And that's a decision that was made, you know, maybe back in the 19th century, somebody decided we needed people to go home and work on the farm. That is not true anymore.
What are some other actions that you think people in the community, businesses, and government officials can take to ensure equity in education?
So this is a huge issue, and so we can always look at the positive and the negative and say COVID has raised this issue to a new level, and everybody realizes that education is not equitably funded in many respects, and that we as a society need to address that, and we need to rethink our education system. So we need, you know, along the lines that I was saying around the length of the day, if you expand a day from 7 to 6 every day, and you add in an after school program that is good for everybody and free in the same school building. You don't have to come up with any new place, you know, you don't have to build any new buildings for that. So that would be one way to address these concerns for the long term, and especially if we're going back, you know, now in the next few months to have kids with a new understanding that kids can safely be in elementary school and preschool and even middle school under the COVID situation, then find ways to do that initially and then to expand that. There's a lot of room to discuss that kind of thing. Basically, we need more societal community discussions, right? About, okay, so this is not working. And part of the dynamic is always, well, how are you going to pay for it, right? That's always the way people end it. We don't have the money, forget it. Nice idea, forget it. Well, society decides where it wants to invest, and it shows what it values from where it invests. So if it's not investing in education, it's not because it can't afford to. So I would say what parents and community leaders can do is take the opportunity to advocate, to create innovation for equity committees within their communities, and to speak up really with some bold new ideas rather than just working incrementally within a system that is flawed in and of itself. Make a new system.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like you said, the time has come now for us to think a little bit outside of the box. Even if businesses did an assessment on how much time is lost because, you know, families have to work or have to leave work early to pick up their kids versus if they didn't have that extra pressure. So, you know, there definitely is some answers to some of these questions. It's just a matter of us taking time to seek those answers. Dr. Gregory, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Making After School podcast, which focused on the influence COVID-19 has had on the citizens of Harris County.
Thank you.
Making After School cool.
As always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us to the Making After School Cool podcast. Please join us for future episodes as we continue to explore issues relevant to the needs of the out-of-school time field.